Welcome to ID the Future, a podcast about intelligent design and evolution.
Greetings. My name is Casey Luskin with the ID the Future podcast with the Center for Science and Culture based out of the Discovery Institute in Seattle, Washington. And on today's ID the Future podcast, we have a special guest, Seth Cooper. Seth is an attorney who actually used to work here at Discovery Institute and closely followed the events leading up to the Kitzmiller versus Dover trial, the first trial to assess the constitutionality of teaching intelligent design in public schools. Seth recently co-authored an article with Leonard Brown about a particularly interesting set of events during the Kitzmiller trial, namely the denial of intervention of the Foundation for Thought and Ethics. To give listeners a little background and help them to understand what this is all about, Seth, why don't you tell us a little bit about Foundation for Thought and Ethics and how they were relevant to the Kitzmiller case?
The Foundation for Thought and Ethics is a Texas nonprofit organization. It's publisher of the textbook of Pandas and People, which is a pro-intelligent design textbook supplement. And it was directly, well, at least at the beginning, it was indirectly implicated in the case because the school board had procured some copies of the textbook and placed it in their school library. The school board in Dover then adopted a policy whereby an administrator would read aloud to the students at the beginning of biology class a disclaimer statement that mentioned the existence of the textbook in the library.
And Seth, that textbook is explicitly pro-intelligent design, isn't that right?
That's correct. It's a design-favorable textbook.
And they were denied intervention in the case. So can you explain a little bit about what does it mean to say that they were denied intervention?
Well, once things got down the road, as we'll discuss later, and it became clear that the Foundation for Thought and Ethics had its interests and intellectual property rights at issue in the trial, they attempted to become a third party in the case. They filed a motion to intervene as a third party and essentially become co-defendants in the case. This would allow them to participate directly in the trial, to call witnesses, to cross-examine other witnesses, to submit briefs, etc.
And this would basically allow them to defend their textbook that was sort of being attacked in the lawsuit. Is that right?
That's exactly right. And unfortunately, as strong as the merits were for their intervention in the case, it was denied by the judge.
So, Seth, why did you decide to write about this in your article?
My co-author and I decided to write about the denial of FTE's intervention in the Kitzmiller case because the entire episode here was something of an injustice. It was an outrage, in my opinion. Here you have a nonprofit organization whose interests and intellectual property rights were put on trial in a court of law, and yet that same organization was completely barred from defending itself. We also wrote about this episode because it's been largely overlooked in all of the massive media coverage that's been devoted to this trial. Many books and law review articles have been written or will be written in the future on this case, including your book, Casey, Traipsing into Evolution, which I highly recommend. And there will also likely even be TV movies out about this trial. So it's important to get the story straight and to get the whole story. I think in writing about this, we're serving to counter the inevitable attempts to subsume the entire case and the issue of intelligent design into inherit the win too and to fit in with that kind of stereotype. But in reality, the facts are far more complicated in this case and in the events leading up to it. And it's very important that people realize that the facts are not quite what everyone thinks, and they need to get the story right.
So, Seth, it was April of 2005 is right about the time when your article picks up and starts talking about when FTE first entered the picture. Can you summarize what exactly happened that spring?
In late April of 2005, John Buell, who was president of Foundation for Thought and Ethics, received a subpoena in the mail from the ACLU. The ACLU informed Buell that it was involved in a Pennsylvania lawsuit concerning intelligent design, which implicated of Pandas and People. So what the ACLU demanded of Buell was that he hand over all drafts and documents associated with that of Pandas and People textbook. Moreover, the ACLU also demanded that Buell hand over all documents and drafts associated with an as-yet unpublished manuscript of a new pro-intelligent design textbook called Design of Life. So basically, the ACLU was demanding that FTE compromise its serious intellectual property interests and potentially jeopardize the future of FTE's entire business. Inevitably, the ACLU would turn all of those documents over to the anti-ID, Darwin-only lobby group known as the NCSE. So here you have the court process being used to further a continuing squabble that the NCSE had with FTE. Now, John Buell had vaguely heard of the Pennsylvania trial, but there was also a lot of news coverage at that time concerning the Grantsburg, Wisconsin school boards grappling with the issue of evolution, as well as a continuing federal trial over evolution textbook stickers in Georgia. Now, Buell had no attorney when he was contacted by the ACLU in April. Very quickly, he procured himself an intellectual property attorney in Texas, and he also received attorney help in Pennsylvania, including my co-author, Leonard Brown. Well, immediately, John Buell filed a motion to quash the subpoenas. Basically, he asked the court to not enforce the ACLU's request that he hand over all of those sensitive documents. That was ultimately denied in May. Very soon thereafter, Buell spoke with his attorneys and decided that his interests were so clearly implicated in this case by all of those documents that he has to turn over, including the unpublished manuscripts, that he really had to try to intervene and become a third party to the suit just to defend his own rights and intellectual property interests. So what happened was is they filed their motion, and arguments took place in June of 2005. John Buell testified on behalf of FTE. 6 weeks later, the judge came down with his ruling in the matter, and he denied FTE the intervention. Basically, it wasn't a mere denial. It was a real stomping by the judge. The judge dismissed any serious interest claims that Buell put forth. I mean, this is regardless of the fact that Buell could actually point to tangible intellectual property interests, including unpublished work. He could also attach a estimated dollar figure of the amount of money that his organization would stand to lose as a result of an adverse trial decision. This notwithstanding, the judge would have none of it. He basically told Buell that he should have followed enough news accounts to know of this trial in Pennsylvania and gotten himself involved. The judge also took exception to the fact that Buell did not agree with the way the school board's lawyers were handling the case. This is all something that should go in favor of the intervention being granted, but unfortunately it was denied.
Now, Seth, you earlier described the FTE episode in Dover as an outrage, and maybe you've already given us a lot of reasons for that, but why would you call an outrage, and could you elaborate on that?
Well, FTE wanted its day in court to defend its own rights and interests. Basically, as a result of the trial, its book of Pandas and People was declared a federally banned book in Dover. All of this happened without FTE being able to represent itself. It was essentially convicted in absentia. And it seems to violate just some of the basic legal norms to not allow them to defend themselves. Now, I'm from the state of Washington, and so I might be a little impartial to the way we do things here. But I think all of these principles were nicely summed up by my own state Supreme Court in a decision of about 100 years ago. Our court once stated the following: "It is a rule of law, as old as the law itself, that a court cannot adjudicate the rights of parties who were not actually or constructively before it, with an opportunity to defend or maintain their rights in action." This is something that FTE was denied in this case, and that's why I call it an injustice, and that's why I call it an outrage.
Those are definitely very profound words, Seth. And near the end of your article, you discussed the significant cultural impact the Dover trial has had versus its actually very minor legal effect that it's had upon the rest of the country. Could you further explain that?
As a matter of law, the decision in Kitzmiller versus Dover Area School Board has no binding legal effect. I repeat, it has no binding legal effect. Since Kitzmiller versus Dover is not an appellate court decision, it is not counted as binding legal precedent, but it is only binding on the actual parties to the lawsuit, in particular, the Dover Area School Board. That's it. There's vast legal precedent on this point. People somehow get intimidated by courts. I can understand that a little bit. But you need to see, when you read about this case in the paper and you see it cited as law of the land, keep in mind that's incorrect. It is only binding on the actual parties of the case. That's that.
Okay, Seth, well, thank you very much for joining us today. Again, my name is Casey Luskin, and we're signing off here from the ID the Future podcast. with the Center for Science and Culture at the Discovery Institute in Seattle, Washington. Thanks a lot for listening.
Music on ID the Future comes courtesy of composer Yuri Mamchur. Visit www.yuriproductions.com and check out his latest CD, In the Harbor. This program was recorded by Discovery Institute's Center for Science and Culture. Discovery President is Bruce Chapman. ID the Future Managing Editor is Robert Crowther. And the producer is Keith Finn. ID the Future and ID Science in the News is copyright Discovery Institute 2006. For more information, visit www.discovery.org or www.idthefuture.com.